Welcome. My name is Mary McKenzie. If you are here for self-empathy, healing from the inside out, you're in the right spot. I'm going to start with a little reading called Companioning. It was written by a man named Alan Wolfelt. Alan is most known for working with people who are dying. So he's most known for his work with death and dying. So it's called Companioning. Companioning is about honoring the spirit, not about focusing on the intellect. Companioning is about curiosity, not about expertise. It's about learning from others, not teaching them. Companioning is about walking alongside, not about leading or being led. It's about being still, not about frantic movement forward. Companioning is about discovering the gift of sacred silence, not about filling every moment with talk. It's about listening with the heart, not about analyzing with the head. Companioning is about bearing witness to the struggles of others. It's not about judging or directing those struggles. It's about being present to a person's pain, not about taking away or relieving the pain. Companioning is about respecting disorder and confusion, not about imposing logic or order. And companioning is about going to the wilderness of the soul with another human being, or yourself in this case. It's not about thinking you're responsible for finding the way out. So that, to me, sort of in a nutshell, expresses what I think the value of self-empathy is. For me, it's about companioning ourselves along the way. I think that many of us who have learned nonviolent communication have focused our attention on others, getting really good at becoming good empaths to others, and also being skilled at expressing ourselves. But to me, the true healing comes when we actually can listen to ourselves and take some time to understand our own needs and find a way to attend to them in a way that will bring more joy and ease and kind of a sense of peace in our lives. So that's what we're here to work on. So I'd like to hear from a few of you about what you're hoping to get out of this session.
I've never done anything with NVC per se, but I've studied a lot with Judith Lasseter and just finished an extensive session on empathy. And I'm really looking to just deepen my understanding and ability to empathize with myself and to empathize with others and to hear the perspective straight from the source from NVC folks.
Excellent. Thanks. I'm glad you're here. You know, it's interesting to me because my first class in NVC was a self-empathy class as well. I spent the first 8 weeks just learning self-empathy before I learned anything else. Anybody else? What are you hoping to get out of this session?
I've kind of been following along with the emails that you send out every once in a while and kind of a few little NVC things and looking at things from a few directions. But I think for myself right now, I'm sort of at a real crossroads in my life and considering a lot of different things and looking at how my choices sort of affect me and also how they affect other people. And so definitely some tools for kind of being able to tune into what I need and not just what other people need. Some ways to kind of get some clarity for myself so that I make sure I'm going in the right direction for the right reasons.
Well, I really like what you're saying. I think that for some of us, if we put our focus outside of ourselves too much, we have a tendency to become unbalanced. And we can even develop resentments and anger in our relationships because we're focused so much on the others and we forget ourselves. And there's a basic, just the most basic premise in nonviolent communication, which is valuing all needs equally. It's a desire to value all needs equally. And if we leave ourselves out of that agreement, like we're focusing too much on others and not focusing on ourselves, then we're actually not able to live the sweetness of nonviolent communication consciousness. The real value to me is when we can find a way to live in the possibility that all needs to matter, mine and yours. Find a way to balance all of that so that we can live in harmony with both of our values, both of what matters to us. Thank you. Is there anybody else?
I'm looking forward to knowing more about what this is about. Self-empathy is a pretty new idea for me.
Excellent. Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to say what you're hoping to get out of this session or the course?
I am seeking to reconnect with myself, maybe even just connect with myself in the first place. And it's from what I've taken already from the companioning piece is it seems like it's about really being present for yourself or for others when that's appropriate. I guess in recent times I've been very disconnected from my own needs, doing what you mentioned earlier, being focused on someone else's needs. And I think in the end, I really, by being disconnected from myself, I pretty much shut down, and I shut down in terms of the other person too. I disconnected from the other person. So
Thank you so much. Yeah, I do think that another way to think about self-empathy is presence to self. And I also want to comment on something else that you said that I think is pretty powerful. And I think sometimes we forget it. I think many of us understand that if we think negatively of other people, we put a wall between us and them. But it's true also if we think negatively about ourselves. Because when we're thinking negatively about ourselves, it's hard to be full on open, full on in love, full on vulnerable, because we have a tendency to protect ourselves when we're thinking badly about ourselves. And so developing a self-empathy practice, a regular self-empathy practice, can be a powerful tool in keeping us more open and keeping the wall that we have a tendency to build between us and other people down, keeping that wall down. Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of nonviolent communication, talked about NVC, even the name, nonviolent communication. He talked about violence being on a continuum, anything from judgment all the way to physical violence. And our goal is to spend as little time as we can on that continuum. And the way that we stay on the continuum is we create distance between us and others because we forget the humanity or the divinity. He would actually call it the divinity in us or others. And so what self-empathy does is it helps us remember that divinity in us and others. And in that remembering, we spend less time on that continuum of violence. Go ahead.
Very similar to all the others. I think I'm pretty good with discovering empathy towards others, but I'm having a very hard time applying it to myself. And when I succeed, then I feel guilty. So my purpose is if I could learn how to practice this gentler to myself and learn more about it.
Thank you. And also I'll say that developing self-empathy practice will increase your ability to empathize with others. Because the more we get to know ourselves, the more we can relate to others. So there's sort of a sidebar benefit to it. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to start a little talking about myself and why self-empathy matters to me so much. So I mentioned earlier that self-empathy was the first class that I took in nonviolent communication. And it was with a brand new trainer. She'd only been certified for a few weeks. So this trainer had never taught a class before. So she decided to start with self-empathy. And I took it with about seven other women, and we were all 40 years old or older when we took this class. And at that time, I wasn't very well connected to my feelings or what I wanted. So if somebody asked me, do you want to do this or that? I wouldn't be able to tell you. I had no idea really what I wanted to do. So I would just say, well, why don't you just decide? And then when we were doing the thing, I could decide in the moment whether I was enjoying it or not. But I didn't have a sense of myself enough that I could say ahead of time, this is what I like to do, or this is what I feel like doing right now, or this would be my preference right now. It was extremely difficult for me. And the other thing that I noticed is I could be really mad about something and other people wouldn't have even the slightest idea that I was angry. And that just blew my mind because I would think I was so seething inside, but other people couldn't read me at all. I was really stoic and pretty shut down. Somebody else mentioned that earlier, pretty shut down. And I was so shut down even that I didn't even really know why it mattered to be connected to myself. I didn't even know why it mattered. So I took this class and I started to see patterns in the things that triggered me. And then I sort of expanded what I learned in that class and I developed my own process. It's called the RAP process, the Mackenzie RAP. I started to do this process that took me even deeper and deeper into my deeper needs. And I started to see patterns. I'm going to give you a concrete example. So one of the things that I started to learn about myself is that I had a need to be heard and understood, a pretty incredible need to be heard and understood. And I didn't have a sense that that need was being met in any of my relationships. So whenever I thought I wasn't heard or I thought I wasn't understood, I would talk louder and I would move in closer. And other people would necessarily back out because I was obnoxious. And this happened over and over and over and over until through the self-empathy process, I started to notice my pattern. And I noticed that the reason that this need was not met in any of my relationships, well, first of all, the important thing was I noticed the pattern that underneath all my self-empathy that I did, almost always underneath it was a desire to be heard. And so that opened up my eyes to, okay, so if this is such a big deal for me and it's not getting met, what can I do? So it shifted me from being the victim of this to being empowered to do something different. And then I started noticing that in my relationships, when I would express something, I would ask at the end of it, my request at the end would be, what's going on with you or how does this land with you? And then other people would talk about themselves. And it never, ever helped me know that I was being heard. Because what I was good at was helping other people talk about themselves. But not, do you hear me? Do you know me? And so I started to realize that my family and friends were doing exactly what I asked. They were truly trying to love me by doing what I wanted, which was talking about themselves. But my deep longing was to be known for me and to be heard. And so I started to change my request. It was so simple to something like, would you tell me what you heard me say? And then they started telling me what they heard. And then my need for being heard was met. This was profound to me because I had spent my lifetime not being heard and not being understood in my relationship. And I could see the pattern. I could see what I was doing that was perpetuating that need being unmet. And I could make a different decision. And in doing that, I turned all my relationships around. Suddenly, I had a beautiful, strong ability to be heard and understood. And I was able to connect deeper with my friendships and my family members. So it was life-changing when I started to notice this. And then sometime later, as I was still in my daily authenticity practice, I started to notice body sensations that came up when I had that need for being heard met, when it was met or when it was unmet. And I noticed that before my head could understand all the data. So I'd be talking to a person, and I'd notice that that particular sensation, which is in my gut, it's a particular kind of wrenching in my gut, that would come up, and I'd think, oh, do you have a need to be heard? I would think it's inside my head, and yes, I would have that need, and so I could attend to it right then in the situation. So I went from a person who most of the time would go back to people later and say, you know that conversation? Well, in that conversation, this is what was going on with me. I had a need to be heard. Would you tell me what you heard me say? To a person who could tend to things in the moment. It was utterly powerful. All of a sudden, I went from a shut down person who didn't know what I was feeling, didn't know what I needed, to on the spot, a person who understood who I was and could take that into my relationships with others in the moment. And when that happened, everything shifted. My ability to be present to others shifted. My own inner compassion grew. Everything shifted inside of me because I was present in my life. And that's when I realized that safety is an inside-out thing. It happens when I'm connected, when I'm clear. So for me, this was life-changing. So I am thrilled to be sharing this with you today. Thrilled, because this work has been my deepest healing of anything I've ever done. So I'm hoping that that will be true for you too. So throughout the class, I will be talking about 6 methods of self-empathy in the 6-week class. Anything from the kind that provides empathy for deeper healing, like really starting to deal with some of your deeper issues, and also self-empathy practices that are quick and easy and you can do on the spot really easily, and several things in between. There'll also be some meditations that we'll talk about and that we'll practice. And so in the end, what I'm hoping you'll have is a toolbox of possibilities, and you'll have clarity and maybe some understanding about which of these tools work better for you and in what situations, so that you can start to have a self-empathy practice. I think I'm just going to pause there and see if anybody has any questions or comments before I move into the next piece.
Thank you, Mary, for that wonderful introduction, because one of the things that I had been going to add to what I hope to get out of this is that ability to be present in the moment. I so often find that with time, I can get back to, you know, what was going on with me, what my feelings are. But just in the last couple of days, I've had some challenging things where I realized I was being triggered and I can more quickly get back to it, but not quite in the moment. And so the idea of building that ability to be there is pretty powerful.
Excellent. Thanks for speaking up.
I have a question, which is, I've been practicing self-empathy and working with some of the tools. I'm getting a little better at it. I'm still very new to it. And my question is, will you also be addressing how to bridge self-empathy with empathy with others? I think it's in the making requests. So I'm wondering if you'll be talking about that at all.
It'll come up if one of you bring it up. It's not in my plan to cover that.
Okay.
My plan was to focus specifically on self-empathy. And I know that what happens is sometimes when people give themselves empathy, they start to have questions about, okay, now that I have this information, what do I do with it?
Exactly. All right, good. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was intrigued by your description when you talked about how you used to interact with people and how you would move your body or in an attempt to get your need to be heard to be met, that it seems like the practice of self-empathy includes paying attention to everything about that interaction, or because I guess I think of MVC as more focused into like watching what's going on, I don't know, more on a feeling level inside. It never really occurred to me to think about the larger world outside of that. I don't know if I'm explaining myself very well, but.
Yeah, well, I would just like to say that to me, what MVC does, and especially the self-empathy process, is it helps us become so present to what's going on that we sort of automatically become more present to others and ourselves. It literally, for me, increased my ability to be compassionate for others. And it wasn't like I was trying to be compassionate. Thanks for your comment. Go ahead.
I was just recognizing in myself that sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, doing a lot of stuff on my own and kind of getting lost in it. So the question that came up was, are there ways to sort of get support outside of these kind of education sessions if we need a little help or sort of some one-on-one support to kind of work through something because we're getting lost inside our own head?
Absolutely. So there are certified trainers all over the world where you could work in person. And also, most of us will work over the phone to help people through individual situations. So, absolutely. Okay, so I don't see any other hands up, so I'm going to keep going. So in nonviolent communication, there's basically 2 ways to communicate. One of them is to empathize, either with somebody else or ourselves. And the other is to express ourselves honestly. And expressing ourselves honestly sounds kind of simple in a way, like just speaking up for yourself, but there's some art to it. It's about speaking up for ourselves in a way that other people actually will hear us, maybe want to hear us, maybe take some effort to hear us. And empathy for self and others is about really understanding the deeper meaning of why something is upsetting to us or joyful What's the connection to that? So there are those three ways of communicating, and we are going to focus exclusively in this course on self-empathy. The reason I do that is because I honestly believe that if we get better connected to ourselves, if we learn more about ourselves, we will have way more that we can give to others, and we will automatically express ourselves in an easier way to be heard. So that's what our focus is going to be on this class. I want to ask a question of you. I'm curious, what keeps you from focusing on your own needs as opposed to other people's? So the question is, what keeps you from focusing on yourself?
I think for me, as I see it right now, it's contradictory needs, because one of my very strong needs is to be there for others. This is where I get a little lost.
Yeah, so it sounds like it, in your mind there's a struggle, and there's either or. Either the other person can get their needs met, or I can get my needs met. And my guess is that what you'd really like is someplace in the middle that values both needs.
Absolutely, that would be wonderful.
So there doesn't have to be a choice, yeah. Thank you.
What's an obstacle for me is I have a hard time, like I question my own needs, or I don't see them as legitimate. Like I think, oh, maybe I'm asking too much, or I don't have a right to want what I want or something like that. I think that's a big barrier for me, is just I don't have a right to certain things, or maybe I'm wrong in what I'm feeling or wanting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. My guess is that everybody on the call, or most people on the call, can relate to that. Thinking that somehow what's important to us isn't that important. Yes. Go ahead.
For me, I think I can be connected to my needs, but because I sort of, my feelings feel so much out of proportion to what I want, then that stops me expressing what I want, because it's like I can't express that I'm so angry at something so simple.
Let me just see if I understand it. Do you mean that by the time you're ready to talk about what's important to you, your emotions are so big and they seem to be bigger than the situation?
Yeah.
Oh, I can so relate to that. I don't know about you, but this is why that happened for me. I used to have this idea that I didn't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. So I didn't want to make something small, something huge. And so I wouldn't say anything at all. And then I wouldn't say anything, and then I wouldn't say anything. And then my resentment and anger about the situation would grow and grow and grow. And then I would realize, oh, I just actually created that mountain I was so afraid of. And then my emotions would be so big and out of whack for the situation that I wouldn't want to say anything at all then either. And so it just continues to compound and compound. I want to give you one tip, and that is, if you are willing to speak up, even if your emotions are really big, start out by saying that. Just acknowledge it. So I have something I want to say to you. And I'm kind of worried about opening my mouth because I know my emotions are way bigger than the situation calls for. And so I'm hoping you can have some patience with me. Start out with something like that and then say the rest of what you want to say, just at least so you can start talking about it.
During a working day, I become disconnected from what I feel and what I need. I'm sitting there at my desk and the main thought is I just need to get on with the next task. So just a kind of emotional override, I guess.
Yeah, and does it sometimes feel like opening up Pandora's box? If you were to open up even just to notice what you were feeling for a moment, it would be too big to deal with in the moment. Is it like that?
Yeah, I mean, outside of work, it's fine. It's just I feel a lot less safe in a work environment.
Yeah, thank you. So some of the self-empathy techniques that we'll be learning will address how do you do a quick self-empathy process that doesn't take up a ton of time, is really private, simple, but gets us focused enough, clear enough that we can proceed with whatever is going on. And I'm hoping that'll be helpful for you. The one we're doing today is very simple. Thank you for speaking up.
Hi, Mary. I realized that I handled something really well the other day and was able to hold the two needs together. Beautiful. Perfect student. And then I noticed 3 days later I wasn't able to do that. And I've had quite a few years experience of this. And I realized that a habit I have, which is a bit embarrassing, but I love passion. So when people are passionate, or you know those people in big parks where they stand on a soapbox, I love that because they're expressing something that's really important to them, which is what I know I love about nonviolent communication, but it's a love of ranting. And so what I noticed I got back to right then was I couldn't hear that other person's needs. I was really connected to the other person's needs in the first place. And I've got a bit of distance from it now, but I'm hoping to pick up something different from you, Mary, that might help me exercise my muscle. That's the whole idea with exercise, that you need different exercise. You can't keep doing the same thing. So I'm hoping just to hear something. And I've already heard some lovely little gems, not only from yourself, but from everyone else. Yeah, that love of ranting.
Excellent. I like what you said about you love passion. And I also might say intensity. Maybe intensity is also something that you enjoy.
Yes.
And so I know that for me, I have a similar tendency as well. So I just make sure that that need is met elsewhere so that it keeps being filled up, so that it doesn't have to come out in places where people don't love passion or intensity. Thank you for speaking up. Go ahead.
I'm sort of like you in that I don't always know what I need. And my boyfriend, he knows what he needs. He's quick to know what he needs. I'm not. And so it's hard for me to know what I need so quickly. I'm not sure where that comes from, but I remember as a kid, I always felt like the other person came first. If I had a friend over, I thought I was supposed to let them choose first what they wanted. And if I went to their home, I still felt like they got to choose first. I always put myself second.
I bet there are a lot of people on the call who can relate. And especially the thing about not really knowing what your needs are. And self-empathy helps us in a pretty dramatic way, actually, helps us build what I would call our emotional vocabulary. So that would be our feelings and needs. And start to make really positive connections for ourselves so we can understand ourselves better. It's pretty powerful. So I'm just going to call on one other person.
Hi, Mary. Basically, just to piggyback on what you said about the Pandora's box, it's like if I can keep existing in the space that I am, great, because the second that you go there, it might be way too much and throw off the routine and your day-to-day existence. And so kind of just getting by as a happy medium rather than digging in a little deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, I think that's such a powerful thing to say. There's something about settling, and I think that comes from a lack of trust, that if we were to actually go in deeper, that we would find our way out, and we would actually get to thriving. For me, that trust is built by practicing the process over and over. Once there, I think we develop actually some okayness about tension and, you know, big emotions in ourselves and also in others. So it's another one of those lovely byproducts from self-empathy. But I really think there are probably a lot of people on the call who can relate to that fear of even just opening the door, for fear it'll be way worse than what we can deal with or we know how to deal with. Thank you. Okay. So I love hearing what prevents us from being willing to look at ourselves, to spend time focusing on ourselves. One of mine was that I thought it wasn't noble. I thought the noble thing to do would be focusing on other people. That was the kind thing. That was the compassionate thing to do. Through my own practice, I realized that actually focusing on myself is the kind thing to do. Because when I do that, I have more compassion to focus on others. It's kind of like when you're in an airplane and the flight attendant is talking about the air mask that comes down. And they say to put the mask on yourself before your children. And that makes so much sense to me, because if we were to put it on the children first, by the time we've got, you know, the mask on them, we'd run out of air for ourselves. So we have way more to offer if we're sustaining ourselves and resourcing ourselves. So one of the basic tenets of nonviolent communication is valuing all needs equally. And what we consider to be a need could also be a value, are those qualities that we value in our relationships, like love, support, consideration, generosity, caring, respect, anything like that. So we consider those the qualities that we all need in order to thrive in our lives. And when we experience those qualities, we can thrive. And we think of them as universal because we think that anybody on the planet would also need these things to thrive. So, for instance, anybody would need to experience love or compassion or kindness. And the way people experience those needs is different. And that's where we become different as people. So underlying it is that we all have these basic qualities that we value. And we need those qualities. We need to experience those qualities in order to thrive in our lives. But the way we go about getting those needs met or those qualities is really different. Fun for one person might be dancing and horseback riding. Fun for another person might be bowling and reading, as an example. But all of those activities would be considered fun. So that's needs. And then feelings are our emotions that are stirred for us when we think that our needs are met or not. So if I think that I'm not being heard, so heard would be the quality that I value. If I think that, I might feel frustrated or annoyed or mad. If I think that my need for being heard is met, I might feel happy and joyful. So I'll give you one quick example about this. So say you're in the grocery store line, the same grocery store you're always in. But the clerk this time is taking a little bit more time with the person in front of you. One day, I might go in and I might feel frustrated and annoyed about that, maybe disappointed, maybe because I would like more respect or consideration or to be seen or maybe efficiency. Another day, I can walk into the grocery store and I'm in a different emotional place myself. The same thing can happen. And that day, I could feel fine about it, relaxed, at peace. Maybe I think it's fun or interesting, the conversation that's happening. So our emotions are directly attached to whether those qualities are being experienced in our lives in the moment. And so it's an inside-out kind of thing. So I think that's actually all I'm going to say about feelings and needs, although we just have a hand up.
When you said that all needs matter equally, I had a bit of a trigger, because while I do agree philosophically that all needs matter equally, I have experienced sometimes that in terms of like access to resources or power and privilege, like my need for survival or for food or water is more important than someone's need for comfort, for example. And so I have a struggle. Like, I don't know if it's, in general, I think the need for air and water and shelter and, you know, survival needs are more important than comfort and ease and beauty, for example, if that's like an excuse for someone to take the resources from another person to use them for that purpose. So I feel a bit like, I don't know, triggered by that.
Okay, so I wanted to say that I'm pretty sure I didn't say all needs matter. I'm pretty sure what I said was to value all needs, or at the very least, that would have been my intention. I agree with you in principle that survival needs, I would want those to come before the other needs. So in principle, I agree with you. And also, I would like us to value all needs equally, not necessarily meet them all, but just value them. And I also agree with you, that would be very hard if survival was an issue. It would be very hard to have anything in us that would allow us to be present to another's needs. Thank you. Okay. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about a situation in your life that you feel frustrated or disappointed about or angry or sad. Try not to come up with the most painful situation in your life, because you'll only have a few minutes to work with this. And I'd like you to write down one very brief phrase that says the judgment. So what I mean is, if your partner is late most of the time, the judgment might be, he's never on time. Or if your partner talks more than you like to hear, your judgment might be, she talks too much. Or if your boss didn't promote you when you thought you deserved it, your statement might be, she made a bad decision, or she's not thinking straight. And you're not going to share your situation with anybody else, so it can be very private, it can be very personal. So take a moment and write one phrase that describes your situation, the judgment you have about the situation. It's best if you're working with somebody else, so you're talking about somebody else. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is close your eyes if you're comfortable with that. And I'd like you to let your sentence run through your head over and over and over, like you're ruminating on it. And while you're doing that, notice what happens in your body when you do that. So go ahead and close your eyes, let your sentence run through your head over and over and over, like you're ruminating on it. And notice what happens in your body when you do that. And I'll tell you when to stop. So, what did you notice? What was happening in your body when you did that? What did you notice in your body when you let your sentence run through your head over and over?
Tightness in my chest, muscles just getting tight.
Yeah, thank you. Tightness in your chest and muscles getting tight. Excellent.
My throat was closing and my heart felt very heavy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Excellent.
I felt really tight in my throat and chest and just was getting more and more frustrated.
Yes. Yes. It was actually growing. It was becoming bigger and bigger, right? Yes. Thank you.
Tightness in throat, sadness.
Thank you.
My stomach felt like it had too much acid and I quit thinking about it. And then I thought about it again and my stomach felt like it was, just poisonous.
Okay, so I'm just going to say all these out loud again because I hear these same things over and over and over. So our throats get tight, our chest gets tight, stomach gets tight. Sometimes people will clench their fists or their jaw. Sometimes people will hunch over. Like, I don't know if any of you noticed, but your back started to round. It's almost like we get into an exaggerated protection mode. And the other thing I hear is that whatever the emotion was, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The other thing I hear sometimes is people's heartbeat increases and our breathing gets really short and choppy. Like we're just breathing from here to here. We're not taking full breaths. Our breathing gets faster. Our heart rate gets faster. These are really common. I hear them over and over and over. So now what I'd like you to do is write down this sentence, and I'll tell you how to finish it. But for now, just write down the sentence. I love it when. And then at the end of the sentence, what I'd like you to put in is a universal need or a quality that you value that's related to the situation you came up with. So I'm going to give you a few examples. So if your first example was, he's never on time, the new sentence might be, I love it when I experience respect. Or if your first sentence was, she only thinks about herself, the second sentence might be, I love it when I know I matter. So I'm asking you to translate your sentence into I love it when and add a need at the end or a quality that you value. Is there anybody who has a question about the direction?
So I just wanted to clarify, so we're putting in a need that we have, which may or may not be immediately obviously related to the previous situation.
it is directly related to the previous situation. It's directly related to it. What you're not doing is saying, I love it when, you know, Susie Q respects me. It's not specific to the person. It's generally, though, the need or the quality that's related to the situation. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Do you want to share your sentence?
Yeah, I had something like, you know, they're more focused on their needs than on the needs of others.
Okay. So the new sentence might be, I love it when I experience mutuality or reciprocity.
Okay.
Just as examples. Okay, thank you. And did you have a question?
Yes. Well, when I started thinking which need is related, more than one came out. Is it okay that we have few needs?
I would pick the one that is most directly related to the situation.
I had said something about when I'm included, meaning inclusion, connection, mutually. So was the new sentence as I love it when I'm included or I love it when I'm connected?
When you say each one of those out loud, which one of those grabs you in the gut the most?
When I'm
inclusion?
I feel connected, but I don't feel included.
Mm-hmm. That's how I know. So I would go with included then.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, so I'm assuming now that everybody has their I love it when sentence. And so I'd like you to take that new sentence and I'd like you to close your eyes and let that sentence run through your head over and over and over like you're ruminating on it. And notice what happens in your body this time. And I'll tell you when to stop. Okay. So I'd love to hear when you listen to the I love it when sentence, when you let that run through your head, what did you notice in your body that time?
I was noticing that I had named a benefit instead of a need. And I reread my sentence like the fourth or fifth time through and said, hey, wait a minute, that's not even a need. So I changed the word benefit to a need, which is clarity. Mm-hmm. And I just feel lighter.
Thank you. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I wrote, I love it when I'm being considered. And as I sat there, I found myself becoming tearful, mm-hmm. really tearful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? What did you notice in your body when you went through the I love it when several times?
So I noticed that I was much more relaxed. And then I could feel like I had this moment of thinking, oh, that's why I'm putting this judgment out. Like that's the need that I had was what was behind the judgment of other people. And then I mm-hmm. felt like I could come up with ideas for how I could get that need met actually just from knowing what it was.
Absolutely. So what happens to us often is the minute we connect to the need, we start to get ideas about what we could do to support that need being experienced in our life. And like that, I mean, you had a few minutes is all. Thank you.
Yeah, hi. I felt so much more relaxed. I could almost go to sleep. And I felt lighter. And there was a sense of, I could even allow myself now to go for a walk in nature, something for me.
Yes. So I'm curious about some of you, the first go-around, you talked about your stomach being tight and your jaw. Several people mentioned your throat being tight. I wonder if those things relaxed. Lots of times, automatically, all of the areas that were tight before just automatically relax without putting much effort into it at all. They just relax. And I mentioned that sometimes people's breathing gets short and choppy. All of a sudden, we'll just take a deep breath the minute we connect to the need. In fact, I can say, I think I almost always do that. The minute I connect to the need, I just take a deep breath. So I also talked about backs rounding. So another thing that will happen is people will sit back and they'll sit straighter. They automatically will sit straighter. So here's why I think this matters. I think this matters a lot. I actually think this is quite profound. In the first situation, your focus was on what you don't like. Your focus was on making a judgment of another person. And in that focus, then your attention is outside of yourself. And when that happens, we are disempowered because our power is in being connected to ourselves. That's where our real power lies. So the minute that we're outside of ourselves, we become disconnected. And we start to react to things that we don't like. So remember how I told you that I had such a big need for being heard. And if I thought I wasn't being heard, then I would talk louder and I would move in closer. Well, that was because in my mind, I was focused on, you're not listening to me. And so I was reacting to my idea that I wasn't being heard. But when I give myself just a moment of self-empathy, I mean, just a mere moment of it, and I connect with what matters to me, which is to be heard, I would never, in my wildest imagination, talk louder and get into someone's face. If I remembered that I wanted to be heard, I would never, ever get louder and get into someone's face. So this is the difference between reacting to what we don't like and responding to what we want. The difference between reacting to what we don't like and responding to what we want. And here's the thing. You had, I mean, maybe 2 or 3 minutes to do this. It didn't take any time at all. So how I think this can dramatically affect our relationship is, what if you were going to say something to the person you had a judgment about before you did the I love it when, and your focus was on your judgment? I venture that you would say something, and whatever you say, my guess is, would be less likely that somebody would hear you or would be open to hearing you because, you know, your jaw is tight, your stomach's tight, your breathing is short and choppy, your shoulders are rounded, your fists are clenched. It's hard to hear someone like that. But just taking a moment and connecting with what you want can make an enormous difference. So this is, for me, the first self-empathy method I want you to walk away with. I love it when. So you're out in your life, you're having a conversation with someone, and you notice that you get triggered. Just go inside and think to yourself, don't say it out loud, oh man, I love it when I get heard. Oh, I love it when I know that I matter. I love it when I experience compassion. I love it when I can connect easily with people. I love it when I have clarity. I love it when I have passion. I love it when I have intensity. Whatever the thing is, to go in and just notice that for yourself and shift yourself before you say anything to the other, or even make a decision if you want to say anything to the other. I want to point out that you shifted and nothing in your situation has shifted. You haven't spoken to anybody. You haven't even figured out what you're going to say. All you've done is you. And in that process, you've softened and become better ready to have a conversation with the person. I wanted to see if there are any questions or comments.
It was interesting because I realized that once I connected with the need, that first of all, the whole situation seemed like much less of a big deal. And also, I even looking through the list of needs, I was starting to see, well, you know, those people that are making a request, they're just trying to meet their needs. And I could probably figure out their needs if I looked through this. So I had more space to be open to their needs. And the other thing that was interesting was when I was trying to figure out my I love it when sentence, I started off with a bunch of things that I thought I needed, but I realized that I was actually feeling those on behalf of sort of an organization that I'm part of, like that the organization needed those things. And I realized that the deeper need for myself was that, you know, I was feeling like the organization was on some level being threatened or destabilized. And so the deeper need was actually my need for safety that was being triggered up there. So that was interesting to see a couple layers down.
I love what you're saying. Lots of times we do have a tendency to get fooled into thinking that our need is what somebody else's need is. But I love how you were able to clarify there's the organization's need, and then there's your need that could be met if the organization was stable. Excellent. Thank you. So I want to tell you a story that kind of, I think, demonstrates why I think this is so important. One time I was teaching self-empathy in a university class, and the professor was a young woman, and she didn't want to be vulnerable in front of her class. So she was really hoping that one of the students would work with me in a self-empathy practice, but none of them would do it. So she finally said, okay. So she picked a situation that she thought was so simple, she wouldn't have to be vulnerable. She wouldn't have to show emotion in front of her students. And the situation was that her daughter's cat was peeing on her carpet. That was the situation. She thought, ah, well, there's not that much emotion attached to this. So she started giving her self-empathy. And then before we knew it, she cried a lot, because she realized that underneath the situation was her great desire to have some kind of shared value around how they'll share their house. So she lives in a house with her husband and her daughter and son. And she was forever frustrated with how they shared the space. And so in her words, she nickeled and dimed her family constantly. Honey, would you do this? Honey, would you do that? Honey, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? You said you would do this. Why didn't you do that? She was constantly, as she said, policing the home and her family and constantly asking them to do small things. But what she really longed for was some method for having a conversation where they come to agreement on how they share the space. And she'd never seen that before. So, you know, by now her kids, they were older teenagers, so they were like 18 to 20. And she realized that she didn't want to ask her daughter to clean up after the cat. She wanted to have a much bigger conversation with her family about how they share their space. That's one of the values of taking a moment and just looking in and giving yourself empathy and understanding the deeper needs. It's literally about getting a greater understanding of why this thing matters to you so much. And once realizing that, what would you like to do with it? And it's not that asking her family to constantly be doing things is a bad thing necessarily, but it's not ever going to heal that need for her to have a shared understanding about how they share space. So to me, just another example of why I think self-empathy is so powerful, so important. Okay. I'm going to take a minute and look at the chat, because I know there's been quite a lot of activity on the chat. Let's see. Linda said, yes, she's more relaxed this go around. Easier breathing, deeper and slower relief. Excellent. Often people's breathing will slow. Felt relief and relaxation. Harold said, radiating warmth in my chest. I love that. Yeah, I think sometimes our bodies actually get warmer when we connect in with our needs. Also another comment, my chest expanded, I could breathe deeper. Yeah, one person said the first time around when we talked about the first sentence, the judgment sentence, he said his muscles around his eyes got tight and angry. I really think that's interesting. I've not heard that before. I think I'll just open it up.
As I said, I'm new to empathy to myself. So in this example, the empathy was actually taking a time to look inside, which means not met. Why is this aggravating us or upsetting us in some kind? That's the empathy. Is this correct?
Yes. The empathy is connecting to those qualities that we value. It's like connecting to the why that's underneath why it matters to you at all.
And not feeling guilty about taking time out to do that.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing about empathy that I think is really interesting is lots of times the empathy actually supports the need. So for instance, if my need is for being heard and I give myself empathy, then I've heard myself. If my need is for compassion and I take time out to give myself empathy, then I experience compassion. If my need is for love and I take time out, then I experience that need for love. If it's for connection or to matter or support, I mean, you can just go down the list. We actually experience it by the process of empathy, giving ourselves empathy. And that's not to say that I want us to be so talented that we can meet all our own needs and we don't need other people. I don't mean that. I value interdependence. And the value to self-empathy is I'm with myself 24/7. I'm the one I'm always with. And so if I want empathy, I can give it to myself, even if there's no one around. Did you have something you wanted to share?
What came up in my mind is thinking about neuro-linguistic programming and cognitive restructuring and the similarities that I find from training I've had in the past. What's your take on that? Is that something you see, you don't see? And I understand differences, but I'm seeing similarity.
Yeah, I definitely think there are similarities. I don't know that much about brain stuff, but I definitely see similarities. And I think what it does is it calms us and it brings us back into ourselves. And in that way, we are calmed kind of pretty much automatically. When I was a youngster in high school, in our PE class, our teacher brought in a martial arts man. And I don't remember almost anything about this visit with this guy except one thing. So he was trying to teach us how to defend ourselves physically if we should get attacked. And he said, if there's nothing else you remember, I want you to remember to take a deep breath. Because when you take a deep breath, you bring air all the way through your system and you get your whole system working. And when that happens, you'll make a better decision. No matter what happens, you'll make a better decision. And that has stuck with me all these many years later. And that to me is what self-empathy does. It's like a deep breath. It gets me present here, and then anything else that comes after that, I think I'm going to make a better decision.
Clarity as well.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
I found it really interesting what you said about people being more likely to listen to us when we are relaxed rather than tight and, you know, with our fist clenched. That was really interesting to me. And I have a question for you about the I love it when sentence. Do you think it would ever make sense to say it out aloud, or is it always better to say that to ourselves?
I think it depends entirely on the energy that you bring to it. I say it quietly to myself in my head. So sometimes I say I love it when with gritted teeth. So sometimes I'm having to get there to a point when I can connect to the need. So I know the word, but I'm not feeling it yet. So if it's a really charged situation, I might be like, oh, man, I love it when I have respect. That's what's going off in my head. And if I say that a few times, then I can finally relax and say, yeah, oh, I really want respect. I really value respect. If I were to say it out loud, I would want to be in that place when I'm really soft. And I can say, wow, I'd really like respect between us. So somehow bring the other in, not as a way of blaming them or making a statement that, man, I love it when I get respect, but it's not going to happen here. Not like that. That would be the time when I'd want to say it out loud. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I just wanted to respond to something that what Jody was saying. I was thinking, because I haven't done too much with neuro-linguistic programming, but I did a little bit with some solution-focused stuff. And it seems to me that what's similar with this kind of self-empathy process is that it does shift our focus from kind of what's wrong with the situation to, you know, how it could be different and what's positive, which is that need mm-hmm. that we want to be met. Mm-hmm. I think there's some similarities there. And also what you said about the deep breath, because I've also heard that you can actually like trigger different nervous systems. So you can trigger more of the parasympathetic nervous system, which kind of calms down the fight or flight mode just by taking an abdominal breath instead of kind of a tight breath in the chest. So even just that, again, you know, like you said, doing the physical, that can actually reboot on sort of the physiological level.
That's helpful. Thank you.
I just was realizing as I was thinking about the tool of I Love It When, that there's an elderly lady who rambles like someone I knew had Alzheimer's, and I got completely triggered, and I've been trying to figure out what the need is. And if you don't want to work on it, I understand completely, but I am just unable to hear anything else now because I tried to touch this problem, and I was trying to come up with I Love It When brains work well. And when hers doesn't, I get scared to death. I was hoping to turn this tool to that.
Let's look at it. You said the person rambles
like someone I knew who had Alzheimer's.
Okay, so you're not saying this person has Alzheimer's, just that she has characteristics that are similar?
I think it's likely she's got it, but she hasn't said she has it. But it sounds like it.
Okay.
Feel the fear.
So I wonder if maybe what you're wanting in that situation is connection. Or mutuality.
I'm afraid that I will get Alzheimer's, I think, is what I experience when I'm with her. I surely could. Do you know what I mean?
And so I know exactly what you mean.
Out of the room is how I would feel, what I want to do.
Yeah. So I think many of us can probably relate to that. When we see something in another that we don't like, we get scared that we'll have it as well. Somehow we'll get sick too. I think that's about wanting health to trust that you're going to be okay. Maybe wanting reassurance that you're okay. Does any of that land?
Maybe the trust that I will be okay or that I've made different decisions. The person who I remember is my grandmother, so the genetics are there, potentially.
Yeah.
And we didn't know it for a long time. Well, I don't know. I guess this goes really deep for me. I can feel tears in my neck and my throat. Just how I cannot touch this. She's a nice old lady, but I go bananas in her presence. I have to leave. I'm not safe. Yeah. Is how I really feel. And so there's something super basic that I have not yet been able to articulate for myself what the need is. Because if the need came up, I do agree with your principle that potential solutions might pop, but I can't get past the fear of it right now.
Yeah. So really wanting to know that you're okay, wanting reassurance about that. And also I hear you said scared. You're really scared.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're scared. When you think of that need of wanting reassurance or to trust that you're going to be okay, what goes on in you when that happens?
I'm feeling teary, so there we are.
How about we just pause there for a moment? Just let you have your feeling for just a moment. It's really okay just to rest in it for now. I think sometimes we think we need to move through things quickly, and I don't think we do. Sounds like this is really scary, really hard for you.
Oh, it is. She's in a group that I'm close with, too, and I just cringe. I want to trust. It's really safe or okay that I won't lose my mind, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in the I Love It When statement, maybe that's what you say in your head when you're with this woman in your group. I love it when I know I'm okay, or I love it when I have trust that I'm okay.
I'm writing down. I don't know how if I'll be able to access it when I hear it the first time. When it's true, it often sticks, but not always the first time.
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't stick because it's just on that edge of scary new thing, scary new information, scary new feeling, whatever it is. And it's hard to stick then.
Okay, so something that just floated past me that I might be able to attach to would be, I love it when I have trust that I will be okay, even in the presence of others with this problem. Like, there's something really basic about the fact that she's not going to cause the problem for me. What she does is she reminds me that, you know, basically half of people over 65 have this horrible thing. That's what I remember. And it's her presence
reminds me, she doesn't actually raise my risk.
I love that you have that clarity right now. I'm wondering if that clarity is coming from this moment of empathy. I really think that empathy is an amazing thing. It helps us understand things from a much clearer and deeper level. And so what I would like to recommend to you is that you're writing it down. Yes. The next time you know you're going to be in her presence, I would put it on a little sticky note and put it in the palm of your hand or in your purse or something that you can take out and look at casually without making a fuss. Like, I wouldn't pull out a great big piece of paper, just a little thing that you can look at casually just to help yourself remember your I love it when statement. I just want to say how much I'm appreciating that you're not blaming her for it and that you're really clear that she is not the person who's going to cause your health to shift in any way. And that what you're really wanting to do is soften yourself for yourself. I love that.
Wow. Thank you for speaking that. It's really hard to feel good about how it affects me.
Yes. We'll talk about this more next week. Is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Thank you for working on this with me, taking the leap, and I hope it helps someone else too. Thank you.
Thank you. How about we get a show of hands of anybody who experienced any needs met by just witnessing that process? Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of hands go up. So several hands have gone up. I'm just wanting to acknowledge that. Lots of needs met. Thank you. So I want to also talk about something else that came up in the conversation with Jay just towards the end when she said it's not easy to say this out loud. So this is one of the things about self-empathy that's so powerful. There's something about learning not to censor ourselves that's so powerful. I spent much of my life not allowing myself to have a voice. And again, thinking somehow that was the nobler way to be. To not speak up, to not say what matters to me, to not ask for things, to not be a person who needed anything ever. Actually, it's quite lonely to live that way. That's one thing. And the other is that it kept me from even hearing myself. So I would have thought, like, I'm going to use the situation that Jay was just working on, not because I think this is what she was doing. So I'm truly making this up. I might be in the group that she was talking about and thinking, man, she's saying the same thing over and over. I'm really sick of this. I'm tired of this. And then I would start to beat myself up for it. Oh, you should be more compassionate. You shouldn't have that thought. And then I would squelch down all the other judgmental thoughts that I had about the situation. So I never, ever got to hear myself. I never got to know what was really true for me. And self-empathy is all about, at the very least, let's be authentic with ourselves. When I first started doing the process that I'm going to teach you next week, I realized that my inner voice swore a lot. Oh my God, she swore like a sailor. I was astonished at the stuff that would come out of my mouth, out of my thoughts. So I thought that was just who I was, but you know, it wasn't who I was. It was who I was until I heard myself. And then I calmed. And now hardly ever do I swear in a self-empathy process. But I had years and years and years of pent-up frustration. And so in the beginning, she talked loud. She was kind of hard. My inner voice was hard. She swore a lot. And sometimes I can be like that, but not very often, hardly ever really. So there is value in allowing ourselves to be authentic with ourselves. So I think, unless there are any other questions or comments, I'm going to start moving us into a closing round.
I guess one of the things I'm realizing now, why I had the hard time with empathy for self, is because I don't really understand it. For me, meaning of empathy was putting myself in somebody else's shoes, trying to understand them. So I was just wondering, could you share what do you think or feel what empathy for self is?
Empathy for self, for me, is connecting with my universal needs or those qualities that we value. It's connecting with the why about why something bothers me. So, for instance, the example I gave before was you're at a grocery store and the clerk is taking a little bit longer. So one day I might feel fine about that and happy. And then my need might be for support, community, connection. Another day, I might be on the line and I might feel really frustrated and annoyed. And then maybe my needs are for respect, consideration, maybe efficiency. Empathy for self is connecting in with what those needs or values are.
Thank you.
And this whole class will be about that, so we'll learn more and more and more about that.
I have a quick question, and that is, I work in an industry where what other people tell me needs to be kept proprietary, and yet I know I have a deep need to share things and to be very authentic and honest, but I find that sometimes I share things not necessarily breaking confidence, but I realize that I share things more about someone else than myself, or somehow what I share implicates somebody else, and then I feel really bad about it. I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that. It's almost like there's a pressure that builds up in me, but then it makes me feel really bad because I realize that maybe it's something I shouldn't have said.
Yeah. So I guess I would recommend that you go into a self-empathy process to sort of understand, what is the part of you that feels bad about that? My guess is it's about integrity or trust, something about that. And then the other part where you were wanting to share, like you have also a need to share, wanting to find some kind of way that you can share about what matters to you without involving the other. And one simple way to do that is focus on needs. So for instance, you could say, so I was talking to this person, and not giving any information about who that person is, but I was talking to this person, and she was talking about her relationship with her dad, as an example. And it reminded me about my own relationship with my dad, and I got triggered thinking about my relationship with him and how I would have rather have had a more meaningful connection with him or something. So that's not involving the other or implicating them in any way. I went through a process several years ago where I was trying to understand how I could talk about my world without being one up or one down from other people, without trying to make someone better than me or me better or worse than others. So I started to focus exclusively on me. So instead of saying that he did a lousy job, I might think to myself or say, yeah, my needs for clarity weren't met in the workshop today. So that I could take myself away from blaming another and focus more on my needs in the situation. So I don't know if that was actually helpful at all to you.
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I'm going to take Monica's question, and then I'm going to move to the close.
I realize I've been putting my hand up a lot, and I just realized that I had a bit of a sort of reaction after the last thing that I said, and I felt like I kind of distracted a bit from the track that you were on and what you were sharing. And anyways, and there's obviously other patterns under it, but I thought if I didn't say anything, then I might end up kind of disconnecting myself, which is not so useful. So I was just trying to figure out, because I guess I was trying to figure out what my needs were, and like, I'm someone that definitely wants to contribute. So I have a need for contributing, but also for, I think, you know, being accepted and belonging and sort of harmony. And so if I feel like I've said something that maybe wasn't the right thing, then I tend to worry that I said the wrong thing, and then I get scared and a few other emotions there. So I don't know if you have anything you could say to that, but I apologize if I sort of took things off the track from what you were on.
No, actually what I hear in you is a desire to be known and to be true to yourself. That's what I'm hearing. And in this moment, to be heard for what matters to you.
And to know that that's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also I'm wondering too, if you're wanting trust, that I would say something if I wanted you not to speak up so much. Somehow have trust in me that I would be true in our relationship while in this class.
Yeah, and I guess trusting that my natural expression is okay and useful, mm-hmm. and whole. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It matters. Excellent. Thank you. Thanks for speaking up. Okay. So today we talked about one method of self-empathy. It's one of the two of the easiest ones that I know, the I love it when. We will talk about, by the end of the 6 weeks, you will learn 6 methods for self-empathy. Some of them are meditations. Some of them are practices, specific practices. Some of them are quick and easy, and some of them are more involved. And there's one that's really involved. One of my students called it the McKenzie Wrap, and it's the one that for me has been the most healing of anything I've ever done. It's the one that helped me really start to see my patterns, see the ways that I show up in my life that prevent me from experiencing those beautiful qualities that I value. It taught me how to do things differently, make different choices. And it brought me from a place of sometimes 2 weeks later realizing, I was angry about that situation. Moving from that to present moment, in the moment, I'm mad, and be able to express myself. That's what that process did for me, a combination of that and receiving empathy from others. I believe that you will get inner and outer clarity on how a consistent self-empathy practice will improve all your relationships, including your relationship with yourself, because I believe when we're more present to ourselves, we have way more compassion and love and openness to be with others. There's something really powerful that happens when we start to trust ourselves, that then we can relax more in our relationships and we don't have to be quite so guarded. If you're like me, you'll start to get clarity on the things that trigger you, and you'll start to get clarity on what your deeper needs are that you are longing for, but maybe have not truly connected to, maybe have not connected the dots. This is about starting to connect all that information that you might have a little bit here and a little bit there, but starting to connect them so you can see what are your deeper needs and start to make other decisions about what you'd like to do differently. So my example that I gave about this was wanting to be heard, just longing to be heard and known and not knowing how to do that. Self-empathy helped me get there, helped me learn how to get there. And then in the process, you will experience a deeper healing. And the people in your life will be able to experience you differently and enjoy you differently. And I want to just talk for a moment before we close about the value of doing us differently. There was one point in my life when I thought the best I could expect in my relationship with my mother was to not enjoy her company and be okay with that. That actually was huge progress to just come to the point of saying, okay, I don't enjoy her company and I'm going to be okay with that, which to me meant that I wasn't going to blame her and I wasn't going to blame me. And I was going to do my best to not be in judgment of either one of us, to relax in knowing that I don't enjoy her company. That was at the point when I started my self-empathy practice. And one of the things I will always be so grateful for is through the process of self-empathy, changing my relationship with my mom and my dad, by the time they died, I would say the last 5 years of their life, I loved spending time with them. I mean, I loved it. We had such a sweet connection. And, you know, they both died when they were 91. So I'm not sure they changed. I can't honestly tell you what happened, except that I started to fill up my inner resources. And in filling myself up, I was more compassionate to them. And I could start to actually see the ways that they contributed to my life that I hadn't even seen before because I was so stuck on my judgments of them. So I think self-empathy is pretty remarkable, actually. Developing a regular practice is remarkable and pretty profound in how it can affect our relationships without other people maybe doing anything different. I see your hand up.
We've been talking about empathy as if everybody knows what empathy is. How would you define empathy?
So empathy to me is, first of all, a presence. And the presence is trying to understand the other person, trying to understand the world from the other person's perspective. That to me is, first of all, what empathy is, a presence of understanding. Secondly, in nonviolent communication, we give two really wonderful methods for what you can do. Well, one method for what you can do to let the other person know that you have understood them, that you've heard them. And so if we were going to give empathy to someone else, the way of doing that would be you would acknowledge their feelings and needs. Sounds like you'd really love support. Sounds like you're really longing for companionship. It's a simple question that focuses on the quality that you think is attached to the situation at hand. When we're empathizing with ourselves, it's the same thing, but it's turning inward. It's taking a moment to truly understand why does this matter so much to me? What is the deeper quality that is being triggered? or that I'd like to experience, like love, support, nurturing, caring. It's answering the question, why does it matter so much to me? And it's connecting to that universality that we all have. Like, we all need love. We all need support. We all need care. Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of NVC, would consider that connecting to the divinity in us and others. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it helps a great deal. I had heard one very simple definition that empathy is understanding without necessarily agreeing.
That's true.
I found myself thinking about that and ruminating, and then I hadn't really puzzled about it so much until this session about, okay, what does that mean for self-empathy? So I just wanted to hear your words on it.
Well, that statement, empathy is understanding without necessarily agreeing, is an aspect of empathy. It's one aspect of it. Another way of saying it in self-empathy might be understanding without judging would be a way of bringing it to self.
I like that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, everybody. Thank you all so much. I love being with you today. I love spending this time with you.